and welcome to True Romance. This is Carolina Barlow.
This is Devin Leary.
Devin, we have a very special guest today, but before we get to her, we need to talk about the new Sex and the City reboot.
And just like that?
And just like that, my husband is dead in the shower.
That was the spoiler heard around the world because it seems that zero attempt was made whatsoever to hide that spoiler. Everywhere I looked the day the show came out, it was like, what about the Peloton? Big died on a Peloton. I was like, wait, does anyone care that we obviously just know what's going to happen? And then it kind of ruins the episode because the whole time they were like weirdly foreshadowing his death. Like, she's like, you're really going to have another cigar? And he's like, yep. And then
she's like, oh, you love the Peloton. Okay, I'm going to go to a recital instead of going to the Hamptons. Okay. They talk about their plans like the whole episode.
But this is the thing. The creators and writers of Sex and the City have a serious issue with potentially OCD related guilt complex, because the whole storyline of the first movie was that because Miranda said something weird at the rehearsal dinner, Carrie's wedding didn't happen. So she blamed her whole wedding not happening on Miranda. And now because Charlotte invited Carrie to a recital for her daughter, Big died. It's like, that's not how cause and effect works. He didn't die because Charlotte invited her to a recital and they didn't get married because Miranda said, you two are crazy to get married. Like, they have this weird thing where they build storylines around like the idea that one person's actions can destroy someone's life. And for such a low stakes show, it's upsetting.
I've also never had friendships where if, for instance, Devin, when you have children one day and when they have a piano recital, I will have no qualms about saying, I'm not going. I love you. I love your child. I don't need to go to that.
Okay, that's fine. But if you don't come to my 30th birthday, I will be upset about it.
But that does not compare.
That's true.
I wouldn't think your child would care about me going when she was like, she keeps on saying the Manhattan School of Music. It's the Manhattan School of Music.
Yeah.
It just seems, as you said, Devin, I fear that Charlotte has forgotten what acting is.
She definitely has. I actually liked her in the original show. Like, I thought she was good at playing the like perky.
She's funny.
Like, she's that girl that we all know, that girl, and she was good at it. She's struggling to get lines out in a way that doesn't sound like a teen that got pulled out of the mall to act in a commercial and has never acted before. Like, she's
good
like,
comparison.
And Carrie, will you be coming? Like, she doesn't even know the proper, like, the tone. Like,
the
she's
cadence.
Like, yes, the cadence. Like, she's like, Harry, don't do that. It's very confusing. And then, yeah, I felt like, I guess it's interesting that her storyline is that she has a not traditionally feminine daughter and wants her to be feminine.
It makes her kind of seem like a Nazi.
So they have two storylines like that. Like, Miranda's is that she's thinks she's woke and she's not, which I like because it's like, all right, we all know that like she ran for, what did she run for, governor or mayor? Governor, right?
President. No, governor.
Like, we all know she ran for governor, so it's kind of funny to be like, oh, you think you're a woke lady, like pussy hat wearing lady, but you're really not.
You think you're a woke pussy hat wearing son of a bitch.
At the same time, these are women who have stayed living in Manhattan or Brooklyn, and I guess Miranda lives in like Chinatown, for their whole, like, they're not that out of the loop that Charlotte would really be like, you're not going to wear a froofy dress? Like, they don't live in Kansas. That was a little weird.
I thought it was weird that how they try to make her marriage look perfect. Like, her husband comes in on a skateboard with his daughter, and he's like, I keep you on your toes. And she's like,
I know.
And I love it that way. And they kiss. I was like, I would much prefer him coming in being like, don't talk to me. I'm in a bad mood. I'm on a phone call. Your daughter is spoiled. We're raising brats. Like, that
AKA
to me, is
me every time I visit you in California and I come home off the airport.
AKA, like, my relationship with Devin. No, I that felt like it rang so false to me. Emily Nussbaum, who's the New Yorker TV critic, made an interesting point where she said it reminded her of the last seasons of Girls, where she said they all knew the criticism of the show, and so they were incorporating it into their show. Like, we know Hannah Horvath is self-centered. Let's talk about how self-centered she is. We know Allison Williams is a bad friend. Let's talk about what a piece of shit she is. And so all of a sudden, there's an influx of Black characters, which makes sense. The show was insanely white for a show about New York City.
Yeah.
And we're talking about how Miranda's fake woke and how obsessed they are with looks and all this stuff and, you know, heteronormative structures and et cetera. But there's just something that rings false. Will I watch every episode? Of course. I can't wait. Okay. And this is the other crazy thing. I tear up at parts.
I normally would tear up at something like this, but I actually didn't.
When Samantha sent the flowers, I teared up. Which she obviously didn't. I was like, Kim Cattrall's probably laughing at this scene, being like, yeah, right. I'll never fucking send you flowers a day in my life.
I think I was mostly just distracted by, first of all, like the realization that Carrie is actually the enemy because she has married a billionaire. Like their apartment is that of a billionaire's. And so
she also has a podcast.
I mean,
wow, where'd you get that idea?
Where'd you get that idea, Carrie? Talking about relationships on a podcast. Interesting. Should I start calling you, what did they call her? The cis white woman of the podcast? That's you, Carolina, because you have curly hair. You have curly hair. I'm the other people. Okay.
Devin's the minority because she's Irish, which we, of course, forget about.
Yeah, everybody forgets about that. That's funny. I know. I was talking about getting my Irish passport yesterday, and then I was like, so what do? Just, like, show proof that I'm Irish? And I was thinking, like, I would just show up and be like, look at me.
Look at me. They'd be like, oh, she's one of us.
Wait, so in the realm of Succession, which we're going to talk about next, it's like we're learning that billionaires, well, some of us are learning, I guess some of us have known for a while, how evil billionaires are. And then we're meant to root for Carrie living in this giant, like, fucking penthouse for just her and her husband. They don't have kids, but yet they need this giant ass place because he works in fine. Like, I was like, oh, so they're horrible people, and no offense, but, like, am I happy that he died on the Peloton? I don't know. And I just, that was like sudden. I was like, oh, okay. So you're billionaires who live in a penthouse and go to the Hamptons. Interesting. And you are yet the protagonists of this. That was distracting, as well as the pandemic buzzwords. The pandemic buzzwords were crazy, including Peloton. They were like, look, what's the most pandemic death we could do besides dying of COVID? Which they had a person who died of, like, they joked about a person who died of COVID where the woman was like, my husband died of COVID and I couldn't even see him. And Carrie's like,
I know, I was
okay.
Like, oh, interesting plot point.
But they're like, Bridgerton. Oh, yeah, let's watch Bridgerton. Peloton. 6 feet apart. Like, it just, all the pandemic, masturbation, all the pandemic buzzwords.
I don't think masturbation was a pandemic buzzword, but I did think it was really funny.
Cigars
that
was a pandemic buzzword.
I did
Brady
think it was
a pandemic buzzword.
Okay. No one's listening to me. I did think it was really funny that on the podcast that she has, they ask her about masturbation and she's like, excuse, pardon moi. I was like, you were a sex columnist in New York for 100 years. And you never, like, no one's ever talked to you about masturbation and you're, like, terrified of the word.
She was like, the content was a little bit too raunchy for me today. It's like, didn't you have someone pee on you? Wasn't that a thing?
Asked to pee on you, which is one of my favorite episodes. To pee or not to pee, I'll never forget.
Yeah,
that
okay, so
really
you're going to do pee-pee poo-poo jokes, but you're not going to do masturbation. And then they like do this whole thing where she wants Big to masturbate. And again, meanwhile, we're like, so we're watching a man who's about to die. Like, it's just too much.
I thought that scene was strangely very romantic. And yet, I thought, I don't really want to watch this.
I don't want to watch that.
I think this is a good time to introduce your mom.
Okay, I'll just say the only thing I will say that I wrote down in my notes is love Mario Cantone devastating Stanford. That's it.
The lines that were funniest on the show were delivered by from Stanford, particularly when he says that Carrie's this generation's Jackie O because she's still serving looks after her husband's dead.
I loved that. So speaking of serving looks.
Speaking of serving looks.
Now we're going to move into another HBO show. And in order to do that, I want to bring in our guest because she is a super fan of that and of me and of our podcast. I don't know about of Carolina, but Carolina is kind of the outlier in the situation. So
she thinks I'm family.
Please welcome back to the show, New York Times bestselling author and essayist and famously my mom, Anne Leary.
Howdy, guys.
Howdy do.
How do you buy one miniature horse?
How do you say howdy do?
What is this, power of the dog? Okay. So, mom.
Yeah.
Can you get me a glass of water? No, I'm kidding. Welcome to the show. We haven't seen you since the summer. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm so excited that you asked me to be back on the show. And as you know, I'm a regular listener.
Thank God. My mom isn't.
Well, your mom doesn't listen?
She doesn't listen regularly. Neither. I don't think anyone in my family does. And I'm like, wow, you don't want to hear about my sex life anymore. Interesting.
You know who listens to every single episode is my mother. She loves the show. And
she does.
Yeah, she loves hearing about all your fun masturbating and your fornicating.
I mean, we're not that raunchy, mainly because we both are just like, I'm not going to call us losers, but I will say that like, we both like weren't as sexually active as we would have been if like maybe we were hotter.
What? You guys are super hot. What are you talking about?
I know. But we're not like, I mean, Devin and I have spoken about girls in New York. We know. And we're like, God, if we looked like that, we would be such.
You'd have so many STDs, right?
I would have so many STDs. Spoken as a mom. I would be hitting the clubs. I once wished when I was in high school that guys could just have a little green light over their heads, like a Sims character. So I could know that like they were down so I wouldn't have to be rejected. And I really understand that.
They would have a green light and they would come up to you and go, Sabasi, ma bojima. That's what Sims sound like.
On the ground and pee their pants.
Don't most guys have a green light on their head if they're out and at a club?
Maybe in your experience, mom, but it's a little bit harder for us. Maybe in your experience. Maybe that's why you're married. Maybe that's why you're married, okay?
All right, you two are gorgeous, and men are afraid to approach you, in my opinion.
Okay, that's so true. Taking that to the bank.
That's true, aside from a man on the subway the other day who, without any fear at all, just walked right up to me and said, you think you're better than me, bitch? And I kept walking.
That reminds me of being in New York and a man coming up to me when I was 13 saying, you only care about your mommy and your daddy. And me thinking, you're not wrong about that. That's pretty much my world right now. And it still is. So you guys both watched the Succession finale last night.
We watched it together. We did.
It's important.
I'll say one thing, and I'm not afraid to say it. Little too much talking for me during the viewing.
Oh, did I talk to Larry?
There was a few moments of group discussion during the show that I could have done without, but that's okay.
But I don't like talking during TV, so was I doing that?
Okay. She's in denial.
But we rewinded. Oh, well.
We rewinded at one point, but I could have done with the few rewinds. You know what I mean?
I'll have to rewatch the whole season because it's so rich with hot one-liners. One of my favorites last night being Shiv saying, oh, my God, we just walked in on mom and dad fucking us.
I was thinking about that this morning. That was a great line. That was a really great line. I often wonder whether the writers decide who to give that choice. Like, they could have given it to Roman just as easily, but they're like, we're going to give that one to Shiv.
Well, Roman is really the tragic character of last night. Kendall is kind of saved because he finally confesses to the fact that he stood by a waiter's death, and his siblings actually comfort him, which is like a really, like, beautiful scene, I thought. But also I love that they're with the trash that's getting taken out. Like, in the meantime, they're literally getting taken out and they don't even know it.
And they have no idea how to, like, be intimate at all. So their comforting is, like, so awkward.
And weird and dark. Like, he's like, Roman's like, who hasn't killed a kid? You've killed a kid, right, Shiv? And she's like, I will say it's the only time in this series that we've seen all the siblings unify around taking down their dad, and that we're rooting for them, even though all three of them are terrible people. And when Roman, literally on his hands and knees, the directing is so brilliant, goes to Jerry saying, you can help us, right? You can let's help us stop him. And she goes, how will that serve my best interest?
That was heartbreaking.
And heartbreaking. But at the same time, he was sending her dick pics when she was asking him not to and almost derailed her entire career.
That's
so
true.
So it's like, I am speechless. I really don't know what to do. And then we also forget, we're so focused on Logan being the bad parent. We forget that they have a mom who's a sociopath and just traded them in for a London flat.
In some ways, it almost seemed like all three of them went crawling into that meeting. Like they came in and they suddenly were children, which they really are. Right. I mean, they were out of their depth always. And in some ways, I did feel that they, though we love them in some ways and hate them in other ways, they each got the comeuppance they each deserved a little bit.
This is true.
It sucks that their parents made them who they are and are still torturing them. But I personally felt they were suddenly brought down to size. Mm-hmm. And I feel like if I looked at it again, maybe they did something with the camera that made them look smaller than they usually do.
Yeah.
They felt small. I don't know.
Well,
I
Roman also imitated Kendall's position behind the trash cans, where all of a sudden Roman was on his knees and his siblings were comforting him. And there was, I mean, but yeah, I completely agree there. That line Logan Roy says where he's like, make your own fucking pile of money.
Right.
And it's like, oh yeah, these kids have done nothing.
Yeah.
Except.
So there's the sense of entitlement that they don't understand that they have. They suddenly, I think, were faced with it. And frankly, the Tom Greg thing was really rewarding for me because we love them.
And
I love Tom. I love Greg. And I kind of love the way they left it. It was almost like End of the Godfather, where
yes,
when she saw him.
It was compared to that. It was the same color scheme, brown
and white.
Oh, it was? Yes. I'm impressed that you pulled out of your hat just now.
Well, just what it felt like when, you know, at the end of Godfather One, when
one,
yeah, when Diane Keaton, yeah, sees them through the door, she sees him. I just thought it was great watching Shiv's face when he comes and hug her. He starts doing to her what she's always done to him, pretending he cares for her, and she knows. Like she suddenly the look on her face, and that's where what's the actress's name?
Sarah Snook.
That acting in that moment, her face, this thing of like a rabbit caught in a trap, like an animal. She's done that to him their whole marriage. Suddenly, he just did it to her. And it's always going to be like that from now on if she wants to have anything to do with the company.
Yeah.
So I love that.
There's been a power play their whole marriage that she's won until now. And he's always loved her, which makes this betrayal so much more potent because it's the first time he's really done something unloving to her.
I don't think he loves her anymore, and he shouldn't. I love it.
In that moment, I was like, oh, she's going to fucking scream at him. She's going to be like, Tom, like, what the fuck? Like, but she can't do that. Like my mom said, like, she has to continue to play the game and just be like, hi, Tom. And it almost was like painful for me to watch because I was like, just fucking scream at each other. Like, mm-mm. just like just yell at each other. Just like get in a blowout fight. Like, I want them to do that so badly because that's obviously what I would do. But they can't. They have to engage in this weird game. And it's just really fascinating.
So there was an Easter egg here, which was that a while ago, when Tom is freaking out about going to prison, he tells Greg in Greg's weird little shitty cubicle, he says, well, Nero pushed his wife down the stairs.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then he had Sporus castrated and he married him instead, which was like the weirdest exchange of dialogue. At that point, I think he says, I would castrate you and marry you, wouldn't I, Greg? Like, it's very, very strange and weird and sort of, you know, aligns with their homoerotic relationship. Then in this last scene where that beautiful scene where Greg says, you know, what am I going to do with a soul anyways, which is like one of my favorite lines of TV dialogue I've ever heard. And as Allison Agosti on Twitter said, reminds me of dating in LA.
Oh,
They are all so last night in that exchange, she goes, do you want to come with me, Sporus? So it's a callback to him basically saying, I'm pushing my wife down the stairs and I'm going to marry you instead.
Okay, wow. I have to watch that. And I will say, even though I just roasted her, my favorite thing about being friends with, well, not my favorite thing. One of my favorite things about being friends with Carolina is that she points these things out in movies and TV that I never would have noticed.
I noticed it.
Okay, well, I guess I love that about both of you. I'm like, anyway, goo goo gaga, Shiv has big butt.
Well, to be fair, that was my critique of the episode, was that Shiv's butt is all I can stare at during emotional scenes.
She's deeply attractive.
I also, Twitter pointed this out, I didn't intuit this, but there's a kiss of death in every season finale for Succession.
Oh.
So the first one was Logan kissing Kendall after... Uh-huh. Saying that, I know you killed that kid, and blackmailing, basically. The second season is Kendall sneaks a kiss to Logan before he betrays him. And this last episode, chills on my body as I say this, Matthew McFadden kisses the back of Sarah Snook's head as he comes in to quote-unquote check on her.
That's right. That's but right.
Tom McFadden, the actor is so... I'm sorry, Matthew McFadden, who plays Tom, is such a... effing good actor.
Yeah,
because he is actually a very attractive man. Like there was a shot in this series when I was like, oh my, he's tan, he looks so handsome. I forgot, because he plays such a weasel.
No, he plays romantic leads in films, you know, for the
Pride
BBC
and Prejudice. Yeah,
and others too. No, he's very attractive, but he can play a dork really well.
Yeah,
and that is good.
It's frustrating to me that they always say, like, he's shooting out of his league or she's too good for him. I disagree. I think he's very attractive. Yes, he's a extreme Republican apologist who is okay with Nazis, but I think he's attractive and funny and fun. So I don't think that he's shooting out of his league, but he does play it like he is, which I guess is the point.
I also thought the most painful part of this season was when they're having their version of dirty talk, and she says, and I'm out of your league and you're with me even though I don't love you.
So painful.
But he needed that to be able to, that's what made him do this. He needed that. I mean, it, for her to act, she actually finally said it out loud, I don't love you. And it's such gaslighting to make it seem like it's just pillow talk. Oh, she's like dirty.
I know.
She's like, you shouldn't have asked for it then, basically, she says.
Yeah, and he didn't. He never asked for the abuse that she gives him.
I know.
And she always acts as if they both enjoy that, and he never has. So anyway.
People keep saying that it's going to be Gone Girl next season, and someone on Twitter pointed out, no, he Gone Girled her. Like, she is Nick Dunn. She was the one who treated him badly, and he exacted this revenge. She's not the hero that we want her to be. And that's the thing, is that, like, I'm heartbroken for Roman, even though he's a verified bad person. Capital B, capital P.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really just a perfect tragedy. And I both admire the writing and I'm deeply jealous of it. And I'm trying to live with peace over that.
Agreed. Agreed.
I do have to say, conversation for another time, I do not think that Amy Dunn is the hero of Gone Girl. I disagree.
Girl, I thought you were gone.
Okay. So let us.
Okay.
So let us be serious here. This is a serious podcast. Let us take a quick break, and then we're going to come back with a new
segment.
Say it with confidence.
With a new lease on life, I really hope. No, we're going to come back with a new segment and we'll talk to you soon. Okay, this is horrible. Okay, bye. I want true romance. Welcome back to True Romance. So we've decided to do a series of episodes about one of our favorite things that can often, quite often, be connected to romance. I would argue is maybe always connected to romance, but I have a sick mind, so that's just me. So so welcome to our first of a series of episodes of true crime romance, in which we will be having guests come on to tell us about their favorite crime story that is, in their mind, connected to romance. And we really thought, who better to start this series off than prominent Reddit commenter, member of many private investigation services online, and the woman who herself stood across from me in the kitchen when I was a child and said, wait, you don't know about the OJ case? Oh my God. And told me it all. She is Ann Leary, and she's going to take us on a little journey today.
Well, I have to say thank you, guys. And also, I'm just throwing it out there. I don't know why you need other guests to talk about true crime, because I'm free every week. And I know all the crimes. But anyway, I'm just saying other people might. I'm like an encyclopedia, though. If you just need a reference, you could just call me and I'll tell you the names, dates, whatever.
It'll be I'm like obsessed. Phone a mom instead of phone a friend. We're going to phone a mom to
check
in. I
do remember a time.
Mom! Hey, mom!
I remember a time, and I wasn't even trying to be funny, when Devin told me she had read about some crime, and I said in full, like, earnestness, I am so proud that you share and are interested in my, you know, share my love for true crime. Like, more than and your also, many other things. That's what I'm most
proud of. Just yesterday, my mom was talking about like whether or not it's appropriate to send very long text messages. We don't need to go into why she was asking that, but she was saying, like, is it weird to send long text messages? And I said, no, it's not. But I do remember a dinner one night where I actually was with Carolina and our other friend, Peter Kelly, and I received several very long messages from my mom. And when I took a quick glance, I did see a photo of the Kennedy assassination with different characters circled and some sort of commentary about like that this woman here is pictured like this in this photo, but not another photo. And I just said, I can't do it right now. Just right now. I'm eating dinner. Now. Can't get into the Kennedy assassination right now. Maybe over dessert.
Grassy knoll discussions are always current, and I'm surprised. I was a little disappointed because I felt like you could stop the dinner to talk to me about that.
Well, is the grassy knoll what you're here to talk about today, or do you have a different romance-related case in mind?
Yes, I have many. So yeah, my favorite cases are always, I actually looked up crime of passion to prepare for this, because it's a term, and it used to be a legal defense in this country and in other countries.
In Italy, right?
In Italy, in Latin America, isn't that funny? I think in very maybe Catholic romantic countries, romantic, passionate countries, it was a defense that if you found your lover, usually a man found his wife in bed and he killed the guy, it wouldn't maybe let you walk free, but it wasn't murder because it wasn't premeditated. You kind of had justification. It was almost like what we would call now self-defense, like, you know. But there are crimes of passion, and those are the ones I'm most fascinated by. I think the one I'm most obsessed with now, and now I'm remembering we might have talked about this before, was the Lori Vallow Chad Daybell case. Are you familiar?
I don't think we did.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to talk about it too much because it's too involved. And there are probably 30 podcasts devoted to this one crime. But what's great about today's world is that these people haven't even gone to trial yet, but every day there's, you know, people are deep diving into their past. And anyway, it's about a cult, a Mormon offshoot. It's not the LDS church wants everyone to know these are not LDS. You know, these people aren't typical LDS people.
They always say that, though, don't they?
I think so. But my interest isn't in the LDS aspect of it. And this truly was an offshoot. These people believed in, they were preppers. They were, and so there was like overlap.
Like doomsday preppers?
They were doomsday preppers, which is an overlap. Other religions believe in the rapture and doomsday. So they were doomsday preppers. And this Chad Daybell decided he was a visionary, that he received visions from God or something. And I can't go into all the details.
Well, just give us the basics. Like, okay, so let's start with who is Lori Vallow and who is Chad Daybell and how did they come together?
What's their meet cute?
Yeah. Well, they're meet cute. Let me just say where they are now. She's in a federal mental facility because they're assessing whether she can stand trial, and he's in a federal penitentiary. They are on trial for the murder of their current spouses, the murder of her two children, who were found in his backyard, one 7 years old and one 16 years old. Shit. And she is implicated in the murder of a previous husband for life insurance. And, and her brother and other people, multiple murders.
And he killed his wife too?
Yes. Well, yes, both of they fell in love with each other. They were both kind of these cult lead. They had the cult following among this small group of people. It was called Preparing a People.
I relate. Okay.
Yeah, and they believed in zombies. Chad started getting visions of who was zombies and who were not zombies. And they would say, well, my wife's a zombie now. And a zombie means her soul left her body. And that's just a stranger there. And the sooner you kill the body, the happier the person will be. And then they just kill the people. So anyway, it's endless. And there's also, I just love today's world where there's family members who have had, who have their own like websites and YouTube videos who know a lot about it. So you can really go, you can really spend a lot of time on this. I also enjoy, love nothing more than YouTube videos of police interrogations, but that might be for a different show, but I love that.
Well, that was what I was going to ask, was how are they caught and what was their, like, were they completely like, yeah, oh, I mean,
wait,
she was
but
a zombie.
How did they meet? Wait, but I okay. asked how they
okay, so they met because he wrote these really lame books about became a man who sees visions, which the LDS church doesn't believe people can have. But anyway, she found him and started following him and started going to his preparing a people thing. And she's really attractive. She, you know, she especially was when she was younger, and he's really plain and always had the same wife. She's had like four husbands. So he went, he literally saw her and his mind left his body and his penis was in charge. And then she,
we all know the feeling.
And she manipulated him. I think they both manipulated each other, but she's committed a lot of crimes prior to meeting him. So I don't think he can be blamed for the whole thing. That's what's fascinating. It's fascinating to on so many levels, but I don't usually follow crimes where there's child murders or child abuse, like that Kaylee Anthony thing. Like I couldn't watch. I don't really, but this one, it was so, so the reason everyone found out about it and we were following it before we knew the children were dead, the grandparents wanted to see the children. And she said, no, you know, they're visiting this person. She was lying about where the children were. And for months, she wouldn't say where the children were. And then she married, killed her husband, he killed his wife. They did it all in front of the police. And then they finally found the bodies. And then
in front of the, what do you mean in front of the police?
So they were arrested and still said, the children are safe. We just don't want to say where they are. Mm. And so it's all, there's many podcasts. I will recommend one called Hidden True Crime. And this podcast goes deep into this. And the husband is a forensic psychiatrist. He went to Princeton and she's a journalist. And they really go into, he talks a lot about why people are interested in true crime, because his thing is we can't really understand humanity unless we understand all of it, which is evil is usually part of specifically domestic crimes and, you know, certainly crimes that involve children. But this involves many adults who are killed too. It's very convoluted.
So they met at a book event for one of Chad Daybell's books, such as, for example, One Foot in the Grave, The Strange But True Adventures of a Cemetery Sexton.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Oof. And the description of that book is, the author of the acclaimed Emma trilogy, God only knows what that is, switches gears in this nonfiction account of his years working as a cemetery sexton. In this entertaining book, readers will meet such characters as a lock-picking ghost, a coffin-chasing cow, a rock band with boorish graveside manners, and Mrs. Robinson, whose leg preceded her to the grave. So this is a nonfiction account of a lockpicking ghost.
He's a dork, and he's not the brightest bulb.
A dork is a generous term.
He's not the brightest bulb, but his whole shtick is that he had
his
two
whole
near...
You his have whole to, serial the... killing shtick.
The reason he's able to see beyond the veil, so he can see into the next world, because he had two near-death experiences. And I'm not kidding. The near-death experiences, one was he was in the ocean and a wave came and his back was skinned a little bit. That was it.
Okay, so it was one, Blue Crush, basically.
And the other one, it wasn't even that bad. Another one who's on a rock near the ocean and a wave came and knocked him down. And like for a minute, he thought he was dying. So anyway.
He's like, I need my noodle. Where's my noodle?
Wow. Okay, so she walks in. She's stunningly beautiful. Do you think that she's genuinely... Do you think Lori was genuinely attracted to Chad,
yes,
who you said is plain-looking? And I would say that's a generous term for how he looks. Mm-hmm. Do you think that she was genuinely attracted to him? Or do you think she was like, look at this easy mark for my scam of like convincing men to kill people for me?
I think she was attracted to him because she was gullible when it came to the beliefs. She really did believe in this offshoot of that religion. And whenever there's a man in power, often, you know, no matter how sociopathic the woman might be, like, she doesn't see what he looks like. Suddenly he seems really handsome to her. Not always, right, but to an unhealthy person. Then he was attracted to her because she's, you know, sexy and she's super seductive. She's very flirty with men. And there's all, yes, this footage of her talking to cops. She's super flirty. What's great, too, is there's all this footage, which is really embarrassing for the cops. It's their body cam footage of her flirting with them and then believing her.
Of course.
And,
yep,
and then her husband, who she's trying to kill, is like, she's trying to kill me. And they're like, go away now.
Right.
Yeah.
So
it's really interesting. It reminds me of just how clueless men are about women's intentions in general. For instance, we were joking about thinking your friend is mad at you. Men never think that. They're never, right, like, oh my God, are they okay? Like, they seem really uncomfortable or really weird. Like, you have to be so obvious when you're giving a man silent treatment. You have to like literally like huff and drop things loudly and like walk around.
You have to murder their wife basically for them to know you're mad.
No, but it's also true. Like, don't you have friends that a guy is dating a female who you know is really off? She's a complete psychopath.
And all the time.
And then the man can't see it, but the minute a woman meets her, within a second, you know. So men are at a disadvantage there. So we are at a disadvantage in that men are, as far as crime goes, men are physically stronger and we're more victimized by men. But when men, that's why I'm so fascinated by when men are victimized by women. It's rare, but you know, the manipulation level is off the charts compared to a male sociopath, like a female sociopath. No, she's just like going to run circles around her male victim. And I'm always fascinated by that.
It's funny because one time Carolina told me that she was talking to a previous boyfriend and said like she had this realization like that she was like, I've never been wrong before. Right. Do you remember this, Carolina?
I do. I do. And I remember telling him that like I'm actually right about everything. And I truly from the bottom of my soul believe that. And like a part of me now understands like maybe I need some more quote unquote humility. Maybe I need to like come down to earth, but I honestly am right 90% of the time.
No.
And
you are. Yeah. No, that's what I was going to say. It's like, when you first told me that, I was like, okay, first of all, fuck you. No, I'm kidding. I was like, no, you're being, I was like, maybe, I don't know. I just remember like laughing and thinking it was kind of funny, but I was genuinely caught myself sitting here the other day thinking like, wait, I was right about everything. Every girl that I ever said was flirting with someone I was dating was.
Always.
Every
Always.
Person I ever Ugh. Said I thought the person I was dating shouldn't be friends with because they weren't trustworthy turned out to be untrustworthy. Like every time I thought someone was in a bad mood and I asked them they're okay and they said, yeah, I'm fine. I know they're not. I was right. They were not. I think it's a female intuition thing. And it's true. And I also was talking to a friend about it too, where it's like, when we go into any situation, like we naturally have to look around for if there's a threatening person. Like anytime I've been to a bar or a party, like you look around and you're like, ooh, that guy looks kind of sketchy. I don't know. Men never
a
have
movie
to
theater.
Do that. Movie theater, subway, anything. Like I've definitely moved subway cars when I felt threatened by like terrifying American psycho bankers.
That was the point I was going to make, which was that it's just a part of our natural selection process that men just had to be strong and like get a cool club to knock us down with. And women had to read the room, so to speak, read the cave and really try to figure out what our threat level was and communicate that to each other. We had to be better communicators than men and just frankly are. So I completely agree. And I think this is, you know, gaslighting has become a very popular phrase in the last couple of years. And we all generally know it. I think it's overused, kind of. But I will say you have to learn how to overpower it, meaning that people will always second guess you when it comes to these feelings if they're not plain. Like, I think that girl's flirting with you. I think that girl's flirting with you. I think that girl's flirting with you. There's always going to be some butthole who's like, oh, no, she's just like that. No, she's just nice. No, she's just nice. And you feel like the crazy jealous one for being like, no, babe, she's not. But 9 times out of 10, you are right. because people actually go out of their way to make people comfortable. So when they don't, that is a red flag. I love that this is in the same conversation as sociopaths. So we're like, they will kill you.
No, it actually is. But sociopaths don't feel uncomfortable ever. But they actually know that we're at a disadvantage because we do feel uncomfortable. And we actually want to not hurt their feelings. So they take advantage of us. They bank on that. So they will actually do inappropriate things, knowing that it makes us uncomfortable to see them embarrassed. So we will... help that. So it does relate because that's what they use against us. They don't have
that. It reminds me of the near the end of Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, Daniel Craig and Stellan Skarsgård get in a sort of tango, if so to speak. And Stellan Skarsgård says, come in for a drink. And Daniel Craig does. And then later Stellan Skarsgård said, isn't that interesting? Because Stellan Skarsgård is getting ready to kill him. And he says, you were more scared of being rude than you were of getting hurt. And I think that has been, is such a lesson where it's sort of like when you feel like you're at a bad party or you're on a date that you want to end. And instead of just saying, I have to go, you feel like, how do I get out of this situation with making sure this person feels okay? Rather than I'm my needs first.
It's how women are victimized most by men, I think, is that it's not about other people's feelings, you know, hurt people's feelings, be safe. You know what I mean? But yeah, I think always that is something that we have to know that predators rely on. And they also, I think, you know, I won't bore you with another case, but there's another case I was fascinated by because we got to see a woman who's a true sociopath and borderline. And she was literally shape-shifting in front of our eyes during the police interrogation. It was really interesting.
No, what was it?
The Jodi Arias case. My, you know, favorite.
My girl.
It was a true, like, fatal attraction thing. She killed him brutally because he didn't want to go out with her anymore. But she was a true borderline personality person, and she had no soul. She was an empty shell of a person. And during the interrogation, the police officer said, nothing you're saying is true. You're not reacting like a person who's sad about a person dying. And she said, in all earnestness, how does a person act?
Oh my God.
And he told her, and then she did it. He said, well, they usually cry and then they're angry at being accused. So she started crying. And then it was fascinating because she was so smart about how to abuse and manipulate people, but she had no self-awareness. Like, don't ask the guy how to act and then do the thing.
Right. Yeah.
I want true romance.
So I remember one detail that you pointed out to me that was really interesting about Lori was how she shapeshifted and how when she called Chad from prison, she talked in this weird, like baby talk to him. Can you get into that a little bit?
There's a term in the LDS church, which has to do with being sweet or talking sweet. And it's how Mormon women are supposed to be sweet and subservient. And so they all have talk differently especially when public speaking, and they have a very childish kind of way of speaking. But when you see on the body cam, when she's talking to police, she has a different thing, you know, so that's not really her way. But she did a very, you're right, Devin. Yeah, she does a whole very baby talk almost with him.
There was like a recorded prison phone call where she was like, do you want me to pray for you?
Yeah, it was really, really, it's so dark. I mean, her kids are dead. It was dark. It's dark.
Yeah, that baby talk is dark in general. I mean, when you think about it, talking like a baby to your boyfriend or girlfriend.
Who killed your children?
I mean, yeah, there's a deeper level to that one. But I remember, and I may have shared this on the pod before, but I was at a party and this couple that I knew at the time, the girlfriend ran up to her boyfriend and she said, I have tacos. And she was holding tacos in her hand. And he said, ooh, are they delicious?
No.
And I was like, I remember being like, if I am single forever and the alternative is being in a relationship like this, I would take singlehood any day of the week because that's dark. You are going to, you look like you got a lobotomy.
Yeah. It is really dark. If I was in that situation, I might call up a good old quirky cemetery sexton who could step over and help me out.
They are zombies. I can see that soul leaving that body.
Another question I have. So, Mom, you were talking about the family members of the victims, and I specifically remember the family of Lori's husband, who she manipulated her brother into killing her husband for her so she could marry Chad, if I understand correctly. Right. So what has his family's commentary been like? What is there a general vibe of, like, we wish to God our son didn't date this woman? Like, is that the vibe?
Her most recent husband she killed, who was the father of those children, his sister and brother-in-law were the ones that brought it to the police attention. These children are missing. Where are the children? Where are the children?
Right.
But Lori was married before to a man who's dead. His name was Joseph Ryan. And Joseph Ryan's sister, she works in analytics. If you want to find her, she's on, it's called Annie, Ann, like me, A-N-N-I-E, Lytics, like analytics. And she does a lot of work that has nothing to do with crime, but her brother was Joseph Ryan, another one of Lori Vallow's victims. So she did a lot of YouTube videos about it. She's amazing. And what was the question, Devin, about? Oh, yeah. So the family members have been involved. And I think you brought this up because I like left a family dinner because she was doing a YouTube live one night.
Yes,
and I was
like, did.
Annie Ryan's doing a YouTube live, but she was married to another victim. She's Lori has murdered at least two husbands for life insurance. She's had four husbands. She might have murdered. So, yeah. Why is life insurance allowed? I don't understand, because I mean, it's really a motive in many crimes.
My question is, like, did this devolve? Like, was this like the type of thing where, like, she came to a Thanksgiving and they were like, ooh, I don't know about her. Like, she's a little much. And then it evolved into, like, and then she murdered everyone. Or did they love her?
No, everything is strange about this case, Devin. Everything. Like, she didn't have red flags. Women liked her. She had female friends that really liked
her.
And the people thought she was a great
mother. And it was Carolina.
Carolina
was her best female friend.
I threw her a bridal shower for each wedding.
She didn't have red flags. Probably to us she would, but I don't know. Maybe in Utah, you know, her gang.
In Utah, they don't see red flags.
They're all pretty in the same way, too. A lot of these women, in that part, you know, like the Salt Lake City, they're all blonde and they all have the same accent. I don't know. It's very Stepford Wife LDS is what it is.
Right. So they all loved her. And then it was like the shocking turn. Did they believe her about what happened to her husbands?
Well, then later they looked back and thought, oh, yeah, that was weird. They looked back and then they saw, well, you know, now, you know, because she was, you know, but yeah, she fooled a lot of people.
So is also a thing that guys do, is that after the fact, when everything's been fucking revealed, they're like, I guess it was weird how many times she was married and that her husbands did tend to disappear. When you're like, isn't that weird that girl lied about this too? And they're like, I guess that was weird. Or isn't it weird that your, you know, friend also fucked over this person? And they're like, yeah, I mean, now thinking about it, that could have been a indicator of their character.
Also, men calling women crazy, which they do all the time. And men will tend to, if there's a breakup, say, well, she was crazy. But the truth is, they often don't.
It is the Jodi Arias case.
They're honestly, usually the people they call are crazy are just normal. But the truly crazy people, they don't see.
Right. Yeah. Well, when you're a sociopath and not a lot affects you, as you were explaining. And I was just watching Mindhunter over again. And I forgot that was something that was a discovery, basically, on how sociopaths act, where they're interviewing people who killed people. And they're sort of like, I don't really think about it. Like, I don't really feel a lot about it.
It's fascinating to me. It's fascinating to me, the people who, people are born without a conscience. They have no capacity for guilt or shame. So that seems so freeing. I would love to never feel shame. It's like
Oh my gosh, can you imagine?
That's my baseline. So
I think about things that I did that could have hurt people. I'm not kidding, 15 years ago. Thought about it last night.
Same.
And I would love to walk around a little bit freer, at least. Maybe right. Not as much that I would kill a couple husbands. But it also makes me think about how, you know, how Ben Carson, people were saying that he was a sociopath, that people were reading his mannerisms, et cetera. And,
interesting.
And that's my question, too, is like, do you believe that there's people who maybe won't ever kill someone who just walk around?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I think there are pedophiles that just like to have proximity to children who've never truly crossed boundaries, but they're creepy, you know? And I think that's true. I think there are people, there's borderline people in every, you know, there's people who would, you know, hurt an animal, but not a child who would hurt a child. But I do think, especially
in the
meantime,
I'm so sorry, but in the meantime, Holly is in the corner of your screen. She's glaring. She just looked up.
She's glaring like, at me. She's like, it. You mean me, Mom? But Carolina, I think you're right about that. There are people who have fantasized a lot about hurting and killing people that have never done it. Thank God.
I know. I know. I remember hearing about people like that. Like, I remember in high school, there was a guy who was like on a sports team and someone was like, oh, yeah, he wants to join the military. He says he wants to kill someone.
Yes. Well, that's the other thing is there's a place in this world for psychopaths.
Hear that, you guys? There's a place for you.
Yeah. So, like, the number one careers for people who test as psychopaths is like a Navy SEAL or a surgeon or a lawyer. Because, you know, they're people who really don't want, it's almost like the Dexter thing. It's like they just have no qualms about hurting others. So why not use it in a positive way? So they have no fear. They have a really high pain threshold. They have all this, you know, they don't mind cutting people open, but aren't evil.
Yeah.
It's interesting because that is what I said when I interviewed to be Carolina's sidekick on this podcast. I said, I actually have no qualms about hurting you, insulting you, cutting you open. So I think I would make the perfect sidekick. And I think she has been regretting that decision every
she
day.
She did say, I'm not evil, though. And she added the little purple devil smiling emoji.
I said, I'm not evil. There's a space for me. It's occurring to me now. So I looked up Chad's book, Chad Daybell's book, and I noticed on his
don't tell me he has a Goodreads page.
On his Goodreads page,
there's a giveaway.
Mom, his author photo, by the way, my mom is an author. She just before this podcast, she showed me her new author photo and she's like, do you like this? Well, here's some perspective, Mom. His Goodreads author profile photo is his mugshot. And it says Chad Daybell was born 1968 in Provo, Utah. He married Tamara Tammy Douglas in Utah in March 1990. After graduating from BYU in 1992 with a BA in journalism, Daybell worked as a cemetery sexton casually before establishing his End of Days publisher, Spring Creek Book Company, with his wife, a graphic artist and manager. Chad and Tammy had 5 children. And in 2015, Chad Daybell allegedly twice heard a voice telling him to relocate to Rexburg, Idaho. He and Tammy moved there from Utah in June, and then Tammy passed away in 2019. She passed away October 20th, 2019. Chad Daybell married Lori Vallow on November 5th, 2019.
So, yeah, they married 2 weeks after she passed away.
First of all, how the hell is this someone's like Goodreads page? Because someone had to write this. And like,
someone had to write
this?
That bio.
Like, who was like, okay, so the bio is basically...
I wrote it. I didn't have anything else to do.
I finished
my book. I wrote the thing.
Yeah, whoever wrote it, you can see that they're really trying to be fair, maybe overly so. Like,
they're like,
allegedly,
okay, she passed away.
Allegedly, he saw things. Like, that allegedly is doing some heavy lifting.
You mean allegedly he twice heard a voice telling him to relocate to Idaho, where he later... somehow lost his wife to a random passing away and then proposed to his girlfriend. It's very fascinating that this can exist. Meanwhile, I don't even have a website. Really? This guy gets a website and a bio and I don't even have a website.
I will say his bio is longer than mine. And that does have something to do with my accomplishments. I'm like,
assistant for 8 years and now has a podcast. And exactly. He's like, I started a publisher on my own for End of Days books.
Yeah, he self-published his books and he's got a Goodreads page. Whatever.
So he's in jail and she's in this hospital. Do you think they have any interaction at all, Mom?
To one another? I don't know. It looks right now like they're going to turn on each other. And we think already in like the pretrial hearings, Chad's lawyer is trying to make it look like Chad was her victim. He fell prey to her maniacal, like, sociopath or psychopathy. And she's going to say the same thing about him. There's another character, which is her brother, who was the actual assassin of all the people. He's dead now, too. So they're going to blame it all on Alex, her brother. A lot of dead people.
So he assassinated Tammy and...
the children. And he admitted to killing Charles, her husband, and was let go because he said it was self-defense. I mean, it's just a lot, guys. It's a lot.
A lot.
Does Lori have any actual direct blood on her hands? Like, did she kill anyone herself? And did Chad kill anyone herself? Or was it all the brother?
That's what we don't know. But we will find out when there's a trial because there's a lot of forensics that haven't been released. But it does look like her brother definitely was... His phone pinged where the kids were buried, and so did Chad's. You can't get away with crimes, kids. Don't bring your phones to the bodies. They ping.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll leave you with that. And thank you for having me on. And I'll just tell you, I met a super fan of yours. Somebody came up and said, I'm really embarrassed. I hope you don't mind. And I thought she was about to compliment me on something I wrote. And she said, I'm a huge fan of your daughter's podcast. I listen to it every week. Love, love, love. So passing that on, guys, they're now like accosting me on the streets, your fans.
Okay, but was she a zombie? That's what I need to know.
She might have been a zombie.
It's so hard to say these days.
It's hard to say, but I think she was real. I think she was human.
I think she was human.
I think she was still among the living.
We are so lucky to have this wealth of knowledge only a phone call away, or in Devin's case, a room away. And
yes.
We hope we didn't traumatize Holly, your dog in the corner.
Well, thanks for having me on.
I think she's seen a lot.
She has. She's killed a few chipmunks and stuff too.
Thus concludes part one of our true crime, true romance series.
And tune in next week. Thank you, Mom.
Thanks for having
me
on. And I'm just kidding. I don't have to come on again. I wasn't begging.
We will gladly have you on anytime.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Love you. Bye.
All I ever wanted was a little love. I want true romance. It's true. True romance. It's so romantic. Love me, baby. Don't leave me hanging. I want true.